Is she out in the car right now?
No, 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 no. I dropped her off because she came to dinner with me.
She's like fucking sitting in the
car. She's waiting. I cracked the window open a little bit. She'll be fine for a few hours.
The AC is on and her favorite music is playing.
History and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me as always is Max. Max, it's hot outside and I've had a long week. I'm going to take a nap.
Well,
you cool
bad.
With me taking
no.
a nap?
No.
You call it an episode?
No.
Hey, thanks for listening. We'll
no.
catch you guys in two
no.
weeks. Thank you guys so much.
No. No, what are you doing?
I'm going to edit in the end music and then... And we are back. Welcome to Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. We have just napped. We're feeling refreshed. We're feeling great.
I feel great.
Yeah,
incredible.
I feel a lot better after that. Thank you so much.
No problem, man. How you doing? You are sleepy?
Yeah, I've had a long... exhausting but very enjoyable few days.
Cool.
You know, big life changes, new job and whatnot, but it's great.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing good. My fiance and I have started doing this thing where we'll, you know how like when you have a kid, you make the kid sleep by driving around and listening to music?
Yeah.
We'll just like drive around and listen to a true crime podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very silly. A couple days ago, we were driving around.
It's not to make her fall asleep, is it?
No, it's just relaxing. It relaxes us.
Sure, yeah.
But we were, you know, driving around and listening to a podcast, and we like driving through these really rich neighborhoods. And we went through one, and we're kind of going back to the city. And we went over a bridge at one point, and there were like a ton of cops on it. And we were like, oh, that really sucks. Someone probably jumped.
Whoa.
And we got really sad. And it turns out the cops were just pulling you out of a river.
Yeah, it wasn't the cops. It was
the
Columbus Fire Department. Yes.
I like that we very serendipitously met up. Our energies met.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's fucking wild.
We drove over the bridge and we were like, oh, they have boats and like multiple trucks and there's a helicopter.
Yeah. So I guess I should explain that, huh?
You can if you want.
Basically... I went kayaking with my roommate and my kayak got sucked under the water into a pile of driftwood that was stuck between two pillars. The pillars were supporting an off ramp, on the freeway. And yeah, it's funny because about 2 months ago in the same exact location, that same exact bridge, that roommate got stuck in his kayak. Now his kayak, I should put kayak in quotes because it was inflatable. It was just a very poorly constructed kayak. So it was like, okay, well, that's your problem there, is you have a shitty kayak.
Sure.
So when he got stuck, the water was waist deep at the most. So we just kind of waded out and like tried to get his kayak out of the water, but it was stuck. But we pulled him out, went home, had ice cream. It was fine.
Sure.
So this time around,
It's been very rainy here.
So it's been very rainy here in Columbus, but the rain has actually kind of stopped for a couple days for the most part. And that was our logic going out Friday night. Like,
Number one,
he has two brand new hard shell kayaks. So these are better. Two, the water's fine because the weather's pretty nice.
Sure.
Relatively speaking. It calmed down a little bit and the sun was out.
Sure.
But what we didn't know was that because the rain had slowed up for the past few days, up at Hoover Dam, at the top of the Olentangy River, where it meets Columbus, they started releasing water that backed up in Hoover Dam.
Oh, no.
So the water level was high all the way down. And so my kayak got sucked under the water. And literally when it happened, I shouted out to Dustin, guess what just happened again? I pull myself up onto the driftwood. And my phone, miraculously, it worked enough that I could text. But the earpiece didn't work. We tried an amateur rescue, but I could not feel the bottom of the water. And so I was like, we need to just call 911. And Dustin runs up to his truck. He's like, okay, I'm going to get my phone. I'm going to call them. And I'm like, sweet. And while he's doing that, I'm just sitting in the middle of the Olentangy River, chilling by myself, waiting. And I started to freak out. And like, aww. I texted my girlfriend and told her I loved her. And like, aww, just kind of panicked a little bit. Then I see flashing lights on the top of the freeway. And there's literally three different rescue operations that they're trying to get me out. The first one, up on the top of the bridge, about 50, 60 feet above me, I see a crane with the basket come out of the fire engine, and a guy's like making visual contact with me with the flashlight.
Well, that's why we thought someone jumped, is because it's a very high bridge.
Yeah, yeah. The first thing I noticed, like, they lowered a rope down from the top of that bridge.
Like gym class? Like,
I was just like, if you expect me to grab that and just hang on while you pull me up, I'll probably panic, pass out, and die. Uh-huh. So no way. But it turns out they lowered a flashlight and just tried to get a better visual. Because at this point, the sun went down and it was dark.
Yeah, it was very dark.
It was about 10 p.m.
Yep.
Another operation was behind me and a little bit downstream, but they were inflating a boat. And I was like, there's no way they're going to ride that boat upstream.
Yeah, like the police boat, it looks like an Everglades boat kind of thing.
This was inflatable too. Okay. So it was like, it had
a big fan on the back or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But I was just like, there's no way that's going to make it. What ended up eventually working was there is a firefighter directly across from me. They cleared out some of the shrub and weeds and trees.
Uh-huh.
And he was throwing a rope to me. And he just said, don't lean forward, but if you can catch it, catch it. He tried six or seven times, and it was like at the closest 4 feet away from me. So I was like, this sucks.
Bad, yeah.
And then he was like, do you have a stick you can use? And I looked down, and I'm sitting on a stack of sticks. So I was like,
sure.
Yeah. And I grab it first try. And he's like, okay, tie that around your waist. I said, okay. And I tie it around my waist. And the second I tie it around my waist, he and four other firefighters are holding it, and they start pulling me,
yanking you
into the water. I'm like, wait, do I go? And they just said, yeah, just keep your head above water. And I was like, okay. So I grab my phone and stuff it in my life jacket.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, let's go. They pull me and I dunk in the water, and I get completely submerged for a second before, you know, I bob back up.
Jesus.
Because of my life jacket. And yeah, I still can't touch the bottom of the water.
Okay.
So I'm thinking it's like 7 or 8 feet deep,
sure,
at least. And I get up onto shore. They're all pulling me up. And then I have to climb up. You know how under freeways they have those big jagged rocks?
Yeah.
Well, I was wearing flip-flops that got sucked underwater.
Oh,
and those
no.
were gone. So I had to climb up those barefoot. One of the firefighters said, stop for a second, and took off his boots and gave me his socks. So I had some kind of foot protection.
That's very kind.
And then, yeah, we got to the truck and they were like, okay, do you need medical attention? And in my head, I'm just like, well, I just quit my job. And I think that they lifted the mandate, but I'm not going to say whether or not I have health insurance,
yeah.
But you can fill in the blanks yourself, I guess. So I just thought, you know, I can't, like, there's
you
no
can't
way.
Afford a
and I'm
you
not
can't
hurt.
A
I just wanted
yeah.
to make sure. I was like, absolutely not. I'm fine. Thank you so much. And one of the firefighters was like, so, did we learn something today? That was the most scolding they did, was just kind of ask me, did you learn your lesson? And I said, yes, I'm not going to do this ever again. And he was like, so Dustin here says it's your first time kayaking. And it literally was.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, I'd been in a canoe before, but
yeah,
that was my first time in a kayak.
But your own control.
Yeah. And I was like, yep, felt like a little bit of an asshole. And I asked the firefighter who gave me his socks, do you want these back? And he just said, no, you keep those as a reminder.
Okay, cool. You got cool fire socks now, huh?
Yeah. So shout out to the Columbus Fire Department. One of my friends is a firefighter, and they just deal with the most heinous, awful shit. And then this was just like one example of them helping someone who's very stupid. And they just put all hands on deck and they spared no expense to just like make sure I was all right, even down to giving me socks to
That was very help. Sweet.
Yeah. It seems like they spare no expense when it comes to just trying to help people.
Yeah. And
they didn't treat me like an idiot.
I would not
be surprised if when I was gone, they were talking mad shit because I was stupid. But yeah, lessons learned. Columbus Fire Department rocks. You know, give your local firefighters a high five or tell them that you respect them. And also don't kayak in sewer runoff rivers. It fucking sucks.
This is a very good thing for me to see on a Friday night.
Yeah.
It made me very sad. And then I was very happy the next day.
Oh, it's just my friend and he's alive.
Stuck and alive.
Fun fact, I found this out from the news article that I read the next day. My girlfriend sent me a link to a news article where they said that they pulled 4 people out of the Olentangy River in the past 2 weeks.
Very good.
No, not good.
I mean,
good.
That's bad, but they were all kayaking, right?
I think so.
Okay.
That was the implication. But yeah, then they issued a warning, like, we really urge everyone to stop. Like, don't get in the Olentangy River. Which, if you've ever been in Columbus, you should probably know that already, that it's
gross.
Disgusting. Yeah. But yeah, I'm alive.
Glad for that. Glad you didn't die.
Yeah, I'm alive. I'm well. I'm healthy. And I'm ready to face my mortality in a much more controlled environment by talking about death here with you today.
That's good. Yeah, we just had like a fucking 10-minute intro, but it's really good. It makes me really happy. Other things that make me really happy that I want to mention really quick. Did you see we charted in Sweden?
Did we?
We did, which is cool. It's like, I've had friends who have been in like small DIY bands and then they get like their CD pressed in Japan.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, dude, you guys must be like huge, like the biggest band on the planet.
Big in Japan.
But you know, it's, you're not, and we're not big in Sweden, but it still feels really cool.
It's mind blowing that we have enough people in Sweden that listen to our podcast that that's even a possibility.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
And if you're in Sweden and you want to hit me up and talk about Pass Apollo, let me know. It's like Nordic baseball and it's super goofy and I love it.
Right on. And if you want to talk about the movie Midsommar, Max has not seen it yet, so don't talk to him about it. But if
Spoilers.
You want to at me on Twitter or something and tell me how accurate any of that stuff is, I'd really like to know before I plan a visit to a rural village in Sweden how much of that really happens. Please
What's
let
going
me
on
know
out there?
Yes.
Yeah, also shouts out to Kat in New York City for saying a nice thing in the Facebook group recently.
Yeah.
I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
It was very nice. I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah.
I was feeling very happy when I was putting together some of this stuff.
Yeah, Kat is very cool and shared the podcast with a bunch of her friends. And also Ola is always...
Oh, yeah. Ola rules.
Just sending very thoughtful responses to some of the stuff that we talk about. It's fucking sweet.
Yeah.
It's not even the plug part of the episode at the end. And
but they're
already,
cool.
There's too much good stuff happening for us to not talk about
yeah.
it. Yeah. And we really thank you guys.
You know what else is cool and good?
What's that?
2-part podcast episodes.
That's right.
You know what's actually very cool is when the second part is not like really heavy and sad.
Way less of a bummer than last week.
So sorry about that last one. But we're back and we're going to be a little less heavy this time. And then if my notes work out, next time is going to be very, very silly.
Ooh.
So let's kick this episode off with the old pre-dead boys crack into the top moment. Brought to you by Bubbly this week.
Bubbly.
You said this was good. I've never had it.
Yeah, this is... lemon is not my absolute favorite flavor, but I...
oh, that's nice.
It's really refreshing right now.
Yeah. Mmm. 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 So I looked this up, and what I promised in the last episode was post-mortem casket photography in Wisconsin.
Right.
And that's not too bad, because I can deliver on both of those. So let's start with post-mortem photography, the casket photography first. So post-mortem photography is exactly what it sounds like. It's taking a photo of a deceased person, sometimes in a casket and sometimes not.
Okay.
Have you seen all the funeral selfies controversy as of late?
No.
It's really good. Sometimes like teens take a selfie at a funeral.
Like with the deceased?
Yeah. For like the gram.
That's pretty chill.
Yeah. And then they like post it on Instagram. And sometimes people get really upset. But I don't know.
Do they ever do it with like the Snapchat dog filter?
Oh no, I haven't seen that, but that would be pretty good.
I give you permission if I have an open casket funeral. I give everyone permission to do that at my
just
funeral.
Snap them.
And the way that they have wedding hashtags, I gotta have a funeral hashtag. So
we've been thinking of some good ones for my wedding.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're real bangers, but I don't know.
Yeah,
that's fine. So you feel good about that?
Yeah, I love it.
Cool.
Take selfies with. I don't have any place in my heart for reverence during funerals. Yeah, I guess
that's fine. And a lot of people don't feel that same way.
Sure.
But it's because, like, a lot of things with death, our cultural framework has changed a lot from what it used to be. So when you think about when photography was first starting to come into bloom, here's what was going on, specifically with postmortem photography.
Postmortem photography was very common in the 19th century, when death occurred in the home and was a much more common part of life. Many postmortem portraits, especially those of infants and young children, were probably the only photographs ever made of the subjects, partly because long exposure photography required the subject to remain very still. Postmortem photography allowed the family of the deceased to have a photograph of their loved one, rather than nothing at all. The combination of long travel times and rough embalming technology also meant it was difficult for faraway relatives to attend a funeral. In these cases, a postmortem photograph would be taken, attached to a carte de visite, and mailed out.
Yeah, our old friends' carte de visites are back.
Dead people trading cards.
Trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when we talked about Abraham Lincoln lying in state?
Yeah.
So he died in D.C., but he was buried in Illinois. So he had to be shipped back, which, you know, back when you only had trains, mm-hmm. that took some time.
Right.
So what they did for him is they embalmed him, but then would just pack his body on ice while it was being shipped back. And if you're just like an average Joe, you can't afford that, you know?
Right.
If you're either away from your family and you die, they're just going to bury you where you're at, you know? If your family's kind of spread out, they're not going to be able to keep you on ice and quote-unquote fresh long enough for them to make it in for a funeral.
Right.
So that's why they would take this photograph so your family could kind of see what you looked like or at least have a current picture of you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, you might not have a photo. You would get your photo taken at, like, 10. But then if you died when you were 26, maybe you didn't have a photo taken of yourself from ages 10 to 26. So you want a current photo, you know? And this was at the point in time, like the late 1800s, was when America started to really sprawl out. And families were getting separated more and more. So a lot of things were changing in America at this time. And at the end of the Civil War, some of the biggest changes occurred in the areas of race and class. So what we're going to do is head on over to the old Windy City, New York, New York, and specifically look at Harlem.
All right.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Harlem Renaissance for a bit now. So for folks who don't know, here's what that was.
The Harlem Renaissance was an intellectual, social, and artistic explosion centered in Harlem, New York, from about 1915 until the mid-1930s. Until the end of the Civil War, the majority of African Americans had been enslaved and lived in the South. While a small number of African Americans were able to acquire land shortly after the Civil War, most were exploited under the system of Jim Crow laws. As life in the South became increasingly difficult, African Americans began to relocate to northern states. Although most blacks still dealt with a significant amount of institutional racism, the art, fashion, and literature produced were quickly accepted by progressive whites. This created a significant influx of money into the normally working-class neighborhood, creating a sizable and new black middle class.
Yeah. So what we have here is a middle class emerging in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comfort that came from having a lot of wealthy white benefactors, a lot of the innate talents that had been repressed among these people for generations began to kind of flourish, you know? People were making very cool art based on their shared experience and writing really good works of literature about it.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, too, came people practicing visual art. And one of those visual artists who dabbled in photography was a guy named James Van Der Zee. And what he wanted to do was capture the black middle class that was emerging in Harlem. So here are a few of his photos. Little kid in like a nice little suit.
Damn, that kid is dapper as heck.
There's another one on the next page too, if you want to look at that.
Look at all these good-looking people.
Well,
oh, that's a dead guy.
Yeah. So James Van Der Zee took a lot of post-mortem photographs. He actually published these in a pretty significant collection called the Harlem Book of the Dead.
What which a is cool a
super
name.
Cool name, yeah. Now, what do you notice about this bottom photo?
It's a person in a casket, dead, presumably. There's an American flag maybe draped over the top of the casket, but there's also superimposed like photos and illustrations surrounding this.
Uh-huh.
There's one of a soldier holding a gun standing next to a gravestone. There's one of battle, like an illustration of battle with a like 15 American flags being hoisted in the air.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed the important part. It's got a bunch of superimposed images in it.
Okay.
Which was kind of weird at the time.
It's a new development, right?
Yeah. But James Van Der Zee was really into experimental photography. And as you can see here, with some other photos from the Harlem Book of the Dead, he got really experimental with it.
Whoa. So, we have an image here of a woman reclining in a chair, and standing behind her is what appears to be the ghost of a man kind of holding her and comforting her. Is he dead?
He was dead. Yes.
And so how did they get this photo? Did they take a new photo with him standing in that pose, or did they take an existing photo and kind of montage it?
Yeah, if you scroll down to the next one, you'll see that that's exactly what they did. Van Der Zee would take existing photos of people and then superimpose them over scenes of usually their own funeral. So if you look right above the coffin, there's just clearly like an older photograph of a woman hovering over her and her casket.
Yeah.
And it looks like she's just standing on the street, but just over her casket.
Right. I don't know. There's something kind of goofy about it, but I don't know. It's a cool concept, and I can see how this is kind of like the beginnings of an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, so Van Der Zee, he was a big fan of double exposure, which is what you would do to create this photo.
Right.
You know, they would take a plate and layer it over another plate to superimpose kind of like not a negative image, but a faint image over the main photo. So he would, you know, make people look like ghosts, basically. But what this does is this serves as specifically a comfort to families in mourning, because this community at the time was very deeply religious. Some of them adhered to a Christian faith where they wanted to be like, okay, the soul of my grandmother is watching over her. You know, she's an angelic figure.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them adhered to a more traditional like Haitian faith, like voodoo. And they believed that being able to see the soul meant that the soul had not been captured and wasn't trapped. It was free to roam.
Hmm.
So what Van Der Zee was doing was allowing people to kind of peacefully mourn and grieve and not feel afraid that the souls of their loved ones were being trapped or tormented somewhere. So I also found like kind of a cool contemporary review of the Harlem Book of the Dead, and it says a lot about how important these photographs were to Harlem residents.
James Van Der Zee's Harlem Book of the Dead is about the crossroads of life and death. Like the Haitian voodoo god Gide? Gide?
Your guess is as good as mine on that.
Geddy?
Geddy Lee?
Geddy Lee. Like the Haitian voodoo god Gide, whose capacity for living is legendary, but whose symbol is the cross on the tomb, the Van Der Zee book shows how the bodies of the dead affect the souls of the living. Van der Zee's book is about judgment, about how the living and the dead view each other at their final encounter. Through its pictures, the book depicts people at a cosmic threshold and is intimately connected to the culture from which it springs.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. You know, a lot of this postmortem stuff seems weird to us. I think especially superimposing the ghostly image of the deceased person over the coffin seems weird to us.
Yeah.
But when you consider the culture that it came from, it would have been a real comfort to these folks.
Yeah.
It would have been really cool.
Interesting.
So, you know, as we're talking about that, that kind of makes me think about another book with a lot of postmortem photographs that is intimately connected to the culture from which it came from, which is a little book called Wisconsin Death Trip.
And no, to be clear, we are not talking about the album by American rock band Static X.
Hell yeah. That's some Tony Hawk's ass thing.
Yo, push it.
So, true Pre-Dead Boys fans might know that we recorded an episode about this.
True pre-deadheads.
Pre-deadheads. True heads. But it's never seen the light of day.
Yeah, because the sound quality was dog shit, and also we didn't know what we were doing yet.
No clue. I looked at my notes from that, and it was like a page, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
yeah, we didn't know what we were doing back then. Not like now, where we only kind of know what we're
extremely
doing.
Confident about our abilities. We also got really buck wild with it and watched the movie that accompanies the book and did a commentary track.
Yeah.
Which was insane.
It was.
We just like sat in my basement for an hour and a half where there were like mice running around and like talked about this movie.
Which, should we talk about the movie?
We'll talk about the book. I think the book's a little more cool. We can talk about the movie at some point.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. So, Dorian, I'm going to quiz you on how well you were paying attention.
Oh, fuck.
2 years ago. What is Wisconsin Death Trip?
Wisconsin Death Trip collects excerpts of text and photos from a local newspaper in a small town in Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah.
And the short story is that a lot of these are weird.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are very sad.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are presented in this book without really any kind of context because we just don't really have context for a lot of these stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was like such a small town newspaper that it kind of depended on your part of this small town. You know this family up the road.
Yeah.
You know these people.
Yeah.
So the people reading it had the context, but now it's just kind of this weird artifact of a tiny town that we don't really know entirely too much about.
Exactly, yeah. Because at the time, you know, you might not be a newsworthy person in life, but it was really important to know when people died, because if they owed you money or something and you were trying to collect, you would need to have a record of that person's death in order to, like, I don't know, in order to collect their debts or something like that. I don't know where I'm going with that. I don't understand. I don't owe anyone money. Don't come looking at me for money.
You don't even have money.
I don't have money.
I tried taking your money. You didn't have it.
I didn't have any dang money. So, yeah, a lot of this book contains kind of isolated obituaries of people.
Obituaries, right, yeah.
Yeah, some of which are very, very silly, and some of which I've done a little aside and included in here. So if you want to read some of these, they're very good.
Oh, I absolutely want to read all of these.
They kick ass. And I also want to mention that I have no beef with Wisconsin.
No way.
I've been to Milwaukee once for like 4 hours, and I ate a Subway buffalo chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
And then I saw my favorite band of all time, and then I left Wisconsin. I've never returned.
Okay. Did you imply that you didn't like Wisconsin, or?
No, I think some people feel like we're slamming Wisconsin here, but we're not.
I certainly am not. Two of my favorite entertainers,
Brett Favre came
from,
and Aaron Rodgers.
Well, no, I wasn't going to talk about them. The Green Bay Packers are the only publicly owned franchise.
That's
in
cool.
The
That's
National
very
Football
cool.
League. That is one of the most respectable things in modern sports. Also, the band Tenement is one of my favorite punk bands that's currently active.
Okay.
You need to listen to them. Okay. They're amazing. They have I think it's a double album, or it's just a really long album called Predatory Headlights.
Cool.
It's one of my favorite albums of all time. It's so incredible. Really well done. Also, Ben Kissel from Last Podcast on the Left.
Wisconsin head.
He's from Wisconsin. And where would we be if we didn't have the fine people of Wisconsin?
I would be in a way worse place, I'll tell you that.
That's right. All right, should I read some obituaries?
Yeah, get some obituaries out of there.
All right, here we go. Here's the first one. Alexander Gardepi, age 90 years, died at Prairie du Chien. He walked into a saloon, drank a glass of gin, asked the time of day, sat down, and died.
No context.
That's it. That's the entire obituary. Here's another. Mrs. Carter, residing at Trow's Mill, who has been in charge of the boarding house at A.S. Trow's Cranberry Marsh, was taken sick at the marsh last week and fell down, sustaining internal injuries which have dethroned her reason. She has been removed to her home here and a few nights since arose from her bed and ran through the woods. A night or two after she was found trying to strangle herself with a towel, it is hoped the trouble is only temporary and that she may soon recover her mind.
No context.
No context. So not all of these are obituaries. Some of these are just like...
just newspaper reports.
Hey, in case you were worried about Mrs. Carter, she's alive, but she could use some help.
Did try to strangle herself with a towel.
And run around the woods. So, you know, thoughts and prayers. Here's another. G. Drinkwine, father of Miss Lillian Drinkwine, attempted suicide a few days ago at Sparta. He swallowed a large quantity of cigar stubs.
No context.
I mean, I'm no expert on suicide, and I certainly don't believe anybody should attempt it, but I have a hunch that that's not going to do the job.
It might, but you would just be very, very sick.
It would be gross and painful. Ugh. Good Lord.
I don't know. But in addition to all these obituaries or just kind of reports of people inflicting great bodily harm on themselves, there's a lot of death photography in this book.
Yes.
However, unlike in Vanderzee's book, they're not really presented artfully. I didn't want to shock you with any more photos because I know I did that last time and it was very mean of me.
No, that's all right. I forgive you.
But do you remember? You remember them?
Yeah. Just heads up, if you do read that book, it's an incredible read, and it's got some gorgeous photography. There are child caskets in it, and
yeah,
there's dead kids. So, fair warning, it can be a really interesting and at times amusing book, but there's also some really heavy, harrowing stuff in there. So yeah, thanks for sparing me some of the more gruesome stuff.
Yeah, but you know, it's worth pointing out that a lot of the photos that are in that book are very bleak and kind of stark because they were taken by amateur newspaper photographers who couldn't really afford great cameras and didn't have a lot of experience.
Right, and they reflected the reality of the town too, that like these were things going on and it was necessary to update people on what was going on. So it wasn't all fun and silly stuff.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these are, as you mentioned, there would be a photo of like a kid in a coffin, but the coffin would just be like leaned up against the doorway and there would be like an adult kind of holding the coffin up to make sure it doesn't fall down.
Right.
And it seems like it would be a thing that would be like a good deed by the photographer to take this photo and give it to the family and be like, hey, this is probably the only photo you have of your kid. And
right.
It's at least something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's two very different types of postmortem photography. But, you know, it kind of goes to show that as different as the worlds of Harlem and Wisconsin were, postmortem photography was really important for families who wanted to remember the deceased. But. It's because you're just saying a funny word. Dorian, there is a third type of postmortem photography that I want to talk about.
Oh.
Which is spirit photography.
Spirit photography.
Spirit photography. And I love spirit photography a whole bunch. And, you know, so far tonight we've been talking about death photography specifically as it deals with taking photos of, you know, bodies, people who have recently died. Right now, we're going to talk about a large segment of people who got really into taking photos of the spirits of people long after they died. And, you know, I'm a big fan of spirit photography. I think that I can predict, maybe, that you're going to be a big fan of this as well and really like some of these photographs that I'm about to show you.
That's a very good guess.
Uh-huh. So take a look at some of these gems here.
Now, they got a photo of the actual ghost here. It looks like a man is consoling a woman.
Yes, but he also looks very stately and regal, and maybe like he ended systemic slavery in America.
Yeah, maybe his life was ended a little prematurely.
It's Abraham Lincoln's ghost, baby.
Holy shit. This is so silly.
This photograph is great because what it purports to show is Mary Todd Lincoln, who's Abraham Lincoln's widow, being kind of like Abraham Lincoln is standing behind her and giving her like a kind of like a weak back rub. Like a ghost back rub.
Just the most pitiful there that you've ever seen in your life.
I know I was... Well, he had a very high-pitched voice. I know I was assassinated.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Lincoln did?
Yeah, super nasally.
Wow, okay. Because I just figured since he was like 7 feet tall that he probably sounded very burly.
No, have you heard that Titus Andronicus album? That's the Civil War concept album?
The Monitor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That voice in the beginning, in front of the first song, that's like roughly Abraham Lincoln's real voice.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is that him giving that address at the beginning?
No, it's some guy who's like an Abraham Lincoln scholar.
Oh, just impersonating that kind of voice.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I never saw Lincoln starring Daniel Day-Lewis. Did he try to do that?
Never saw it. Don't care.
Oh, okay. You don't care about a D-Day Lewis movie?
I'm not Lincoln.
Yeah, but it's Daniel Day. That's fine.
I wonder if this was included in the Abraham Lincoln movie. so the great thing about this is that even though it's supposed to be Mary Todd Lincoln, it's definitely not. She was not involved in the making of this photo. What these photographers probably did is they got a Mary Todd Lincoln lookalike, which wouldn't have been hard back in the 1800s when no one knew what people looked like if they lived like 25 miles away.
And she's completely swaddled in clothes.
Yeah.
Like you can only see a square of her face.
Yeah.
And what a face. I love that she's just got this real smug smile and she's like, thank you. Thank you, everybody. It's good to get this role. I really feel my career taking off.
Also, how conveniently framed she is in the lower left-hand corner of the photo.
Right.
So that the kind of frame of the photo can be expanded to include the very tall Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, they did a good job of composition here.
Yeah. People were like too dumb to realize that if it was composed like this, it was probably to facilitate something being included in there. Anyway, so on to the next photo, which is also pretty weird. How about you describe this one?
Well, we have a very nice old man with a good mustache going on. Good big white broom of a mustache. Maybe his wife next to him. She's smiling. She looks pretty happy. They look pretty happy together. And looming over them, it kind of looks like the demon from Insidious with a cloak over her head. So, apparition.
Yeah, it looks like a ventriloquist dummy head made out of paper mache with some like gauze draped over it.
Yeah, coming up out of the background too, just pushing forward toward the viewer.
Also,
very spooky.
Composed in a way where these people are pushed towards like the bottom third of the frame.
Yeah, seriously.
But, you know, these photographs are the kind of photographs that people would go in and request from spirit photographers. People would go in and want basically a seance taken of their dead relative and then have the, like, quote-unquote proof of the seance captured on film. So, you know, the history of spirit photography is partially one of old-timey people being dumb and not knowing that you can, like, play tricks with a camera.
Right.
And also partially one of very funny photos made by jerks who were scamming people out of money. But let's get this little bit of history out of the way first.
The first spirit photographs were produced by accident and were a result of the long exposures required. If the subject moved during the exposure, they appeared in the finished photograph as a blurred, transparent, ghost-like figure. A portrait of one of Queen Victoria's children, Prince Arthur, is arguably the first marketed spirit photograph, and features the ghost-like figure of a nurse who, anxious the young prince might fall over, moved into the frame partway through the exposure. The photo was then held up as proof a guardian angel was watching over the royal family.
Yeah, and if you look at this photo, like, to our eyes, it definitely looks like a very small young boy is about to fall over.
Yes.
He looks... Prince Arthur is kind of dressed up like a maritime sailor.
And he's, what, 4 years old?
Looks about four.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years old. This is a very good photo of that kind of wobbly stance that a toddler has before yeah. they fall on their butt and start crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely looks like he's mid-sway.
And another very funny part of this is that with old tripod cameras, you couldn't lower them. So he has to stand on a block to put himself in frame.
Right.
So he's also boosted like 2 feet off the ground. And you can see this nurse, and it makes sense, because he does look like he's about to pass out, because he's locked his knees.
Oh, yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that.
Which, yeah, pro tip for you, Max, with your wedding day coming up, don't lock your knees up there.
I'm gonna lock them. I'm down in 5 seconds.
Nope.
And get out of there.
We're going to have to, like, prop you up.
Yeah.
The best man is just holding you up with his hand.
But, you know, Prince Albert's nurse, or... Whoa. Prince Arthur's nurse was clearly very afraid, and you can tell she kind of leaned in and was like, oh.
Yeah.
And kind of like tapped him to like wake him up or steady him a little bit.
Yeah. Well, hey, sweetie. Stay awake.
But she's got this kind of ghost image in the photo. And to us, it's very clear that it's like, you know, a nurse steadying him. But if you had never really seen a photo before.
Yeah. Looks like a ghost to me.
Yeah.
That's a ghost.
And especially if you were trying to like... justify the fact that your entire royal family and empire was the sacred will of God and had been ordained.
Do you see? It's a guardian angel.
These angels are watching over my boy.
Yeah, it does play right into that notion. So I could see how the royal family would actually be a big fan of that narrative.
Yeah. But, you know, and this also kind of plays into, like, when you think about what regular photography was like at this time, you can understand how spirit photography came about. Old-timey people at this point weren't smart enough to invent smartphones.
Yep.
So they didn't have, like, cameras because they were dumb.
Right.
And they didn't have, like, they had invented, like, radio towers or anything anyway, so they couldn't get signal or internet. And what's the point?
Really far behind.
Probably working in, like, exclusively Java web pages. I don't even know if that's a smart thing to say.
They're still on Newgrounds. They're so basic.
Idiots. So, if you were a regular person, you didn't have a camera. You would probably get your photo taken less than 5 times over the course of your entire life. And when you did, you would get dressed up in your Sunday best, and you would all take a big fancy trip on down to the photographer in town, and you would sit for a professional session, because that photographer was the expert. And if you got a photograph back from that photographer and you didn't remember seeing a big scary ghost in the room with you, you had to assume that you just didn't see it.
Right.
Because, like, people didn't know that you could manipulate a photo. They were like, oh, it just takes a picture of whatever's there, you know?
Yeah.
So this kind of blind trust that a lot of people placed in photographers at the time, that's going to bring us to a very good story, and that's the story of one William Hope.
Hope was born in Crewe, England, in 1863, and as a young man, he went to work as a carpenter. His talent for capturing the spirits in photographs allegedly came about around 1905 when he and a friend were taking turns photographing one another. In a photo that was taken by Hope, there was an extra, the image of a person who was not physically present when the photo was taken. Hope's partner immediately believed the ghostly apparition was his deceased sister, and insisted that Hope had a psychic gift. Hope began to see the profit that could be made by selling fraudulent photographs of spirits, and assembled a group of friends who called themselves the Crew Circle. Hope's first brush with exposure as a fraud came when local Archbishop Thomas Coley arranged his first sitting. Hope accidentally doctored the photograph with the wrong spirit extra, substituting another elderly woman for a crudely made bust resembling Coley's mother. When Hope tried to confess his fraud to Coley, the Archbishop dismissed his confession as nonsense. He would recognize his mother when he saw her, and the extra in the photo was certainly his mother.
So William Hope has a very weird story. I personally like that he didn't get started scamming people until he was like 40 years old.
Nice.
Yeah, and at that point you should be like an adult. So he gets a start by accidentally taking a spirit photo of just someone who walked into a shot, and the other guy's like, "Oi, that's my sister." But, you know, when you're 40, you should have the kind of acumen to be like, "Oh, well, that's just a long exposure. It's not really your sister." But he didn't.
Well, Max, that's where you're wrong. When it came to this bishop, he tried to tell the truth. He tried to be a good guy.
He did. He tried to get out of his lie.
Look, this was a goof. I'm sorry. And the archbishop literally told him, "You're an idiot. That is my mom. Don't be stupid. That's a ghost of my mom."
I do like that this guy probably felt guilty about duping a lot of people. And also duping, like, a religious figure.
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, "Are you insulting me by insinuating that I wouldn't know my own mother?"
Hey, he tried to do the right thing. And, you know, you don't choose the con life. The con life chooses you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, granted, Hope did try to do the right thing here. Sure. Unfortunately, this kind of legitimization by the Archbishop gets William Hope a lot of notoriety. He becomes like the premier spirit photographer in England at the time. Once you're kind of given the seal of approval by the church, people are like, "Okay, this isn't even witchcraft anymore," which I assumed it would have been considered. Yeah.
They think it's legit.
Yeah.
Seal of approval.
And so people just start flocking to his studio to get these spirit photographs taken. And Hope starts making money hand over fist from people who are asking for these photographic seances. There was another point where he got busted again, which is incredible. Some other guy came in and like did some like sleight of hand work and made some special marks on a photo plate that he gave to William Hope. And then as the guy sat for his photo, Hope swapped out the doctored plate with his own like fake spirit photo plate, and then took the photo and gave it back to the guy. And the guy who had done this investigative journalism was like, "Aha, I figured you out. You switched the plates. There's not this marking on the photo that there should have been.
You rapscallion."
You rapscallion. He kind of whipped him with his cane. But this guy sits down and then writes an article for a prominent newspaper calling out William Hope. And once this is published, like out of the woodwork, all these people start coming out to defend Hope. They're like, "There's no way I got scammed. This is impossible." And one of those people who was defending William Hope was Arthur Conan Doyle.
Of Sherlock Holmes fame.
Of Sherlock Holmes guy, yeah.
Of Sherlock Holmes guy. The writer of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
He came to this guy's defense.
Yeah. So Arthur Conan Doyle was super into spiritualism and mysticism. And ironically, he wrote a bunch of, you know, thorough investigative detective novels and was super into that stuff. But he was really good friends with Harry Houdini, who did like escape magic. But Houdini was like not into this stuff at all.
Yeah. What's the modern day equivalent of that? Like, what's the astrophysicist guy?
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Could you imagine if Neil deGrasse Tyson were like best buds with Chris Angel and he started defending, like, I don't know, flat earthers? It's just like, "Now hear me out.
hear me out. I think Chris Angel has made the world flat. But so after this newspaper article comes out blasting hope, Arthur Conan Doyle actually sits down and writes a whole book on the topic of spirit photography, defending it. And this book includes some real, real gems of spirit photographs. So the book was titled The Case for Spirit Photography. Here's one of the prominent ones that was featured in it.
Oh my God. So, I can describe how this looks, but I guess I should just read this, this description, huh? Here's from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Photograph of Mrs. Buxton of the crew circle with her daughter. Psychic likeness of Mrs. Buxton's father, unlike any other picture in existence. In the bottom left-hand corner is reproduced a normal photograph of Mrs. Buxton's father for comparison. Now, as the description tells you, you can imagine two women standing next to each other. It's funny, they're crossing their arms and look real stern, like it's the back.
Yeah, they look
like
tough.
Like a fucking white snake band photo. And then superimposed in the middle of them is this ornery-looking old man face with a blanket dumped over his head.
He's got, like, the creepy old man smile where he's, like, sneering.
Yeah, it's a snarl. It's a little bit of a snarl.
Yeah.
He looks gross. Yeah, he looks like a ghost that must be defeated. And then in the bottom...
Castlevania.
In the bottom left corner, there's a photograph of, I guess, who this ghost is supposed to look like. This does not look like that man.
No.
This is not a spitting image.
No. It's also very silly to me that Arthur Conan Doyle, in attempting to defend the crew circle, went to members of the crew circle and was like, hey, people say your photos are lies and that you shouldn't be making all this money and that you're scamming everyone. Can you help me prove that you're not lying?
They say that, like, we're scamming people with photographs? Not true. Take a look at this photograph we made.
It's like, it's very silly.
Yes.
I feel bad for Arthur Conan Doyle.
I wonder if just back then the novelty of presenting things as logic and reason, that just in and of itself, that had enough kind of appeal to people that they were like, yeah, well, I'm going to prove things with logic and reason.
Uh-huh.
And then they just kind of say that they prove things with logic and reason and own people with logic. That, like, maybe just saying that you're owning people with logic is not really, like...
It's not an effective
tactic. It's not an effective argument. Food for thought. This has been the Dorian's Political Soapbox segment of the podcast.
So that's that one. This Now, this next photograph, which was also included in Arthur Conan Doyle's book, is... I can't tell if it's goofier or not. It's definitely a little more ghostly.
Ooh.
Let's take a look at this one.
I love this one. Okay, again, the description. From Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, champion of logic and reason. Photograph of Mrs. A. E. Greer with psychic likeness of husband and father. The sitter was a total stranger to the crew circle. See, Max? Didn't even know them. Compare the lower face with figure 27. Oh, I should cut that part up. So, Mrs. Greer is sitting here, just looking kind of bored. Like, why am I here?
Like a lot of photos at the time.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, if you have to stay very, very still for a long period of time, you probably just kind of look bored. I think about working an office job and how it was probably ideal photograph situations where you just sit at a desk staring at a screen for hours at a time, not moving.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to make like a slam on baseball or something.
No. No, I have no qualms with baseball today. Anyway, sitting next to Mrs. Greer is...
Well, not sitting particularly.
It's hard to say. It's a big blob of gas. And just kind of superimposed in the center of it are two tilted off-kilter faces that are melting into each other. And you could say those look like anybody.
Yeah, it looks like you took, like, that kind of, like, art sketch of the mannequin head with, like, you know, the line for eyes and a line for a nose and a line for a mouth, and then filled in some vague details around it.
It's a very generic instructional sort of like what a face looks like face.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any defining features of any human being.
No.
So of course it's perfect for comparing to people.
Yeah.
Did you see it? Dude, Max, that's me and that's you.
Do
you see it?
Just low res enough to work. And I wonder too if part of the kind of proof that these were actual spirits is that the heads are tilted at like a 30 degree angle and that you could be like, see, no person could hold their head like that for a long enough time. This must be a ghost.
That's a good point.
When in reality, they're just doing like an image overlay.
Yeah. They just slap it on there. I don't think they had much strategy to it.
Just like tape an old photograph on there and be like, oh, there we go.
So silly.
I love these. I love these a lot. They're very goofy, and there's a lot more. We'll post the link to the website. But there's a lot more of these just excellent, silly photographs. But, you know, this was a scam, and the crew circle was scamming these people out of money. They did eventually get busted and met their downfall and had to kind of pay everyone back as much as they could, which is good.
Yeah.
And as, like, high-tech as these people were, they naturally influenced a lot of copycat scammers, which is also very good. One of my favorites was a woman named Helen Duncan, who made fake photos in the 1920s and 30s. So what Helen Duncan would do was have seances. And she was an American, and a lot of people had just lost family members in like World War One, or, you know, any of the recent wars America had been embroiled in, or like to like Spanish flu, or, you know, a lot of other horrible things.
Sure.
So she would have seances at her home. And during these seances, she would sit everyone like really far away, and there would be like a single dim candle in the middle of the room, and she would conjure the spirit of like their dead wife. But she didn't just say like, oh, your dead wife's in this room. She would have like a mannequin head floating around with some gossamer and be like, it's coming out of me. The ectoplasm is coming out of my soul and connecting and manifesting in the spirit, you know?
Yeah.
And people would be like, oh, holy shit, I can't really see what's going on up there, so it must be a ghost. People would freak out. And she would sell photographs of her conjuring these spirits.
Okay.
But again, it would be a photo taken from across a room, lit only by a single very dim candle.
Yeah.
Where you could barely make out anything that was going on. But it had to be dark, because if it was light, it would scare the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what some people who were smart started doing was they tried to start calling her on her scam. So what they would do is they would kind of like rig the camera that she would bring into the room to take these spirit photographs so that it would flash when the photograph was taken.
Mm.
And this kind of results in some very, very silly photographs that you can look at here.
Oh my goodness. So with the flash, you can fully see the, I don't know, paper mache faces of these things. They look so fucking silly. And the ectoplasm, as it were, I guess, is just looks like a piece of cloth that's kind of stuffed under the blindfold. Or it looks like it's stuffed into this guy's nose.
Yeah.
So he's just got a big booger. Yeah, these are just shitty, like, coat hanger with a blanket draped over it and a mask taped to it. Like,
yeah.
Productions.
But you can see, like, in that first photo, you can see how Duncan's hands are tied together.
Mm.
And that was kind of like another level. When you went into this room with her, she would have her hands tied. And that way you would know that she wasn't like making the tapping noises or whatever. She wasn't doing this on her own.
Okay.
So they were just, the dummy would be like on the ceiling and it would like drop down. And, you know, it was a whole like jerry-rigged Scooby-Doo system. It's very silly.
And I would have gotten away with it too.
If it wasn't for flash photography. And again, the thing that sucks about people like William Hope and Helen Duncan is that, unlike James Van Der Zee, they were scam artists. And they were profiting on people who had recently been through traumatic experiences and grief and lost a loved one. They would host these seances and then charge people significant amounts of money to get these photographs, which would, you know, make them feel like their loved one was close by or existing in a peaceful place, and then just make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Really gross stuff.
Not just a fun prank. They were taking advantage of people.
Yeah, like Scooby-Doo villains.
Right.
So I guess the lesson that we're going to leave you with today is that if you're going to take some post-mortem photographs, please take them of real people, and only with the consent of family members.
Yes. And put that flash on.
Yeah.
Don't forget to turn your flash on. It's usually a little icon, like a thunderbolt shape with an A next to it, if that means it's set to auto. Or just tap that bad boy again, set it to always on. Just have,
if you're always a real psycho.
Yeah, always have your flash on. Unless you're at a concert. I'll yell at you.
Take your flash off. Stage is lit enough. Also, don't try to con people when they're in emotionally fragile states.
Yeah, if they've lost a loved one, don't try to take money from them. Don't be a piece of shit. Don't be a piece of shit.
It's a good note to end on.
There it is. Max, thank you for opening our eyes here to the world of postmortem photography. And thank you for showing me these spirit photographs, because I got some new computer wallpaper candidates and maybe some new tattoo ideas here.
Oh, I would get one of these.
Dude, that would actually be a really good like t-shirt if we doctored this photo with our two faces.
Oh, that would be sick.
Next to Mrs. Greer. That would be really funny. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening to this episode. We love hearing from you guys. If you have any thoughts, comments, questions about this episode or anything else with death or ghosts, we got opinions about ghosts. We love talking about ghosts.
Love them.
We're on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. You can search Facebook for Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. It's our Facebook group.
A lot of good stuff going on in there all the time. It's very fun and friendly.
It is.
Wet and wild. Wacky.
It's soaking wet in there. Couple shout-outs to members of our Facebook group. Thank you to Kat, spreading the word about our podcast to a bunch of people in New York. We really appreciate that. It's still mind-blowing to either of us that anybody outside of our, like, five of our friends listen to this
I've
podcast.
I've got more friends than that.
I don't. Anyway. Thank you, Kat. Shout out to Ola, who
has some very strong opinions on ELO.
Yeah, she said that Electric Light Orchestra are better than the Beatles. And I 1,000% agree. Fuck the Beatles.
I listened to Mr. Whatever it is.
Blue Sky?
Mr. Blue Sky. That's a good song.
It's like, it's in the top 10 for just the most pleasant songs to listen to. I defy you to be in a bad mood and listen to Mr. Blue Sky.
It's true.
Can't be done. And Jacob Gardner says that he's got some Desert Storm trading cards.
Oh, sweet.
I'm very curious about. And so maybe we'll get some good old tanks and cool toys the American military was playing with. Anyway, thanks for talking with us and just using this as kind of a platform to just like strike up conversation with people across the internet. It's fucking dope. If you want to support this podcast, you can be like Kat and tell your friends about it. You can also tip us a few bucks at ko-fi.com/predeadboys. And you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. For example,
what do you want me to know?
You usually make it sound like, oh!
Oh!
Yeah, thank you.
Oh!
We got a review. We got a review from Wisher Upon Stars on Apple Podcasts. It's 5 stars, and the title is In Flight Entertainment. Here's what they say. A few weeks ago, my best friend who's also left us a review. They were the user WTF is Roach Coach. Says, my best friend and I were headed to Texas for a conference, and she told me about your podcast. Tejas. See. She hates flying, so we listened to the podcast together the whole way there, and I got hooked. It's in caps, so. Hooked.
Hooked.
I have since listened to every single episode at work. My only complaint is that I sometimes look insane when I randomly laugh out loud at work. Thanks for all you do to further death positivity and education on the topic. Y'all rock. P.S. Bucks are great and all, but OU, oh yeah, go Bobcats.
OU, oh yeah.
I suppose so. I have no affiliation with any kind of college sports team. I went to CCAD, and there are no sports teams of any degree of importance at art
school. People aren't even playing like Rocket League.
Yeah, maybe some esports leagues in a year or two. What about you? Do you have an affinity for a sports college sports
My
franchise?
Main goal when I was in school was to get on campus and leave as quickly as possible.
Uh-huh.
The only reason I would dawdle would be to get like Buckeye donuts or something like that.
That's a good reason to dawdle.
I would only slow down for Euros in my leaving of campus. But Athens is probably a nice city. I've heard it's very pretty.
It is. It's lovely. It kind of gets a rap for being just a college party town, which it is. But there's also...
Have you ever tried to drive down, like, Lane Avenue?
On
OSU game day?
Yeah. It's just that the rest of Athens is very, like, scenic and, you know...
Pastoral.
There's a lot of nature, and there's not, like, other city stuff to do like there is in Columbus. So, respect to Athens. It's very pretty there. Go Bobcats, I guess, but here at Pre-Dead Boys, we're Team Euros. Go Euros.
Fighting Euros.
That's right. Anyway, thank you for the review. Also, quick message about the Columbus Podcast Awards. Come out and celebrate with the Columbus Podcast Awards August 25th, 2019. That's this year. We're living it. 2019.
Just took a big sip of coffee when you said that. Spit take.
All over my microphone. It's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Gateway Film Center in Columbus, Ohio. The awards show will highlight and celebrate some of your favorite podcasts in Columbus. This will be a family-friendly, free event, so come out and support. You can register for free tickets to the show at columbuspodcastawards.com. Come hang out with us. Max is still obligated to buy you a beer if you come and visit us there.
I did say that. I will still do it.
I hope you've been saving. Don't they have like some kind of absinthe cocktail at the bar?
Do they?
Yeah, in the torpedo room.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I expect you to buy a $10 cocktail for every single person.
I'm going to go back and delete all the photos of myself that we've ever posted so that no one knows what I look like.
I'm going to dox you so that it's impossible to do that.
Post my phone number.
Our intro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check out that band at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. They started posting some songs off their upcoming new album, which is supposed to come out August
2nd. Some singles.
Yeah, it's a fucking set of bangers. And I'm super stoked for it. Those guys are great. And that's going to do it for us. Use your flash photography. Don't do a con on people with prank photos. What else have we learned? Don't swallow cigar stubs.
Don't try and drink a bunch of cigar stubs.
Don't even drink one, let alone a bunch. Don't do it.
A lot of safety tips in this one.
Yeah, stay safe out there. Max and Dorian reminding you, you're gonna rot.
Fireworks?
Yeah. Fuck it, dude.
Fuck a dog.
Yeah, we got
risk.
Some pranksters at the pre-dead castle just shooting fireworks at
my
our
window.
Battlements. It's okay.
It's probably because I like sleep nude and I don't have curtains, so they're just
they're protesting.
Trying to shoo me away. Blasting fireworks at me.
10 points if you hit his dick.